Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Shall Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagirath had a son named Shuta, whose son was Naba. This son was different from the Naba previously described. Naba had a son named Sindhudvipa. From Sindhudvipa came Ayutayu, and from Ayutayu came Rituparna, who became a friend of Nalaraj. Rituparna taught Nalaraj the art of gambling, and Nalaraj gave Rituparna lessons in controlling and maintaining horses. The son of Rituparna was Sarvakama. Purport. Gambling is also an art. Kshatriyas are allowed to exhibit talent in this art of gambling. By the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything by gambling and were deprived of their kingdom, wife, family and home, because they were not expert in the gambling art. In other words, a devotee may not be expert in materialistic activities. It is therefore advised in the Shastra that materialistic activities are not at all suitable for the living entities, especially the devotees. A devotee should therefore be satisfied to eat whatever is sent as prasadam by the Supreme Lord. A devotee remains pure because he does not take to sinful activities such as gambling, intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex. We'll read these three texts one more time. Sanivesya mano yasmin chaddaya manaya mala traigunyam dushtayam hitva sadyo yatas tadatmanam. Great sages, completely freed from material lusty desires, devote their minds fully to the service of the Lord. Such persons are liberated from material bondage without difficulty, and they become transcendentally situated, acquiring the spiritual quality of the Lord. This is the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shuto Bhagirata Jagye Tasyana Bho Parabhavat Sindhudvipas Tatas Tasmat Ayuta Yustato Bhavat Rituparna Nala Sakho Yasva Vidyamayan Nalat Datvaksha Ridayam Chasmai Sarvakamas Tata Tsatam. Bhagirata had a son named Shuta, whose son was Naba. This son was different from the Naba previously described. Naba had a son named Sindhudvipa. From Sindhudvipa came Ayutayu, and from Ayutayu came Rituparna, who became a friend of Nalaraj. Rituparna taught Nalaraj the art of gambling, and Nalaraj gave Rituparna lessons in controlling and maintaining horses. The son of Rituparna was Sarvakama. So this is the part of Srimad Bhagavatam which gradually leads us to Krishna. So all the dynasties are described which came before the Supreme Lord. And actually, the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I mean, there are some controversies with it. Some say that the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are not exactly corresponding to the 10 cantos, but many senior Vaishnavas agree that largely the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are introduced in the corresponding canto of Srimad Bhagavatam anyway, even though there are definitely other topics mixed in. And so, therefore, the BBT defined Canto 9 as liberation and Canto 10 as ashraya, or taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So, it means that in order to actually come into the association of the Supreme Lord and appreciate the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, we have to become liberated souls. And this is the point Srila Prabhupada often made, that real devotional service starts after liberation. And so here we Bhagavatam is very interesting. It's like it gives such a contrast examples. It gives the examples of perfect devotees, such as Maharaj Bhagirath here, and who was so powerful that he brought Ganges on earth and even employed Lord Shiva in the services. Can you imagine? He managed to, you know, persuade Lord Shiva to take Ganges on his head, the blow of Ganges, because he was the only one powerful enough. So in order to engage such a personalities like Lord Shiva in the process of devotional service, you can understand, and bring Mother Ganga into the material universe, one has to be super, mega, maha, extraordinary Vaishnava, right? So, and we hear the glories of Maharaj Bhagirath in a nutshell, because as we know, Shukadeva Goswami didn't have much time to go into the details, but the details of this story are described in other Vedic literatures. And so Shukadeva Goswami in text 15 glorifies devotees of that caliber, of the caliber of Maharaj Bhagirath, saying that such great souls are completely freed from material lusty desires, and therefore they completely devote themselves to the service of the Lord. And, you know, they are liberated souls. And they display the qualities which are actually Krishna's qualities. We know that devotee has 26 primary qualities, and these 26 are nothing but the reflection of Krishna's qualities. Because Krishna has amazing qualities, therefore devotee has all these qualities. So association rubs off. We associate with Krishna, we become like Krishna in that sense. Qualitatively, not quantitatively, of course. But we can see how this is happening, that Shukadeva Goswami himself is a prime example of that, that he had, you know, he was so closely in touch with the Lord that even the his bodily hue and his face and his eyes and many other bodily features resembled Krishna, right? His meditation on Krishna was so fixed that even physically he started looking like Krishna. Right? And the other example is Uddhava. He was so similar to Krishna due to his prolonged close association that even the residents of Vrindavan, they mistook him for Krishna. And so, actually, it is very true, even in the material, on the material plane, you know, now we have a special time of a year, Prabhupada's marathon. So, if you like to hear one book distribution story, which actually makes the point how association affects one, we can tell it. Would you like to hear the story? So, that was actually in Birmingham. I was distributing books with one devotee door to door. And normally, you know, I would ring the doorbell and would wait for someone to come and answer the door for, you know, like 30 seconds or so. And if there were no response, I would move on. And then I rang one doorbell and there was no response. And I was ready to move on to the next door, but then the door opened slightly and two heads popped out, and one head belonged to a lady of the house, the owner, and the other one belonged to her dog, who happened to be poodle dog, you know, the these curly dogs. And the lady was also curly. And actually, their faces looked so similar. You know, one above, one behind, one below. And I was ready to laugh when I saw, you know, it's actually, someone posted the whole article on the Facebook that dogs and their masters, you know, faces next to each other. And the faces were so similar. It's mind-blowing, you know, how much association affects affects everyone in this material world. And so I wanted to laugh, but I realized it would be, you know, confusing or even offensive. So I restrained myself from laughing. But then, yeah, and also the other funny thing was, you know, why I really wanted to laugh. Because not only they looked similar, but they had exactly same kind of very surprised and confused expression on their faces. You know, they like looked at me both like that. And then I just waited, what's going to be happening next. And then the lady said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm a monk." She said, "Really? What do you want?" And I said, "Well, we're giving out very wonderful spiritual books to all the people, which bring good luck. And everyone is taking one, giving a donation." And she said, "Oh, yeah, sure." You know, and then I said, "Oh, you look like a nice lady. I'm sure you wouldn't mind to spare a little bit, some donation for monks to help us save the world." And she said, "Oh, sure, I will give you a donation, gladly." I was surprised. She didn't even look at the book, and she was already like impelled to give a donation. Then he went, and she brought some money, and she gave me the money, and she took the book. And then she said, "Do you know why I was, you know, so readily giving you a donation?" I said, "No." She said, "Actually, because you're a real holy man." I said, "Well, how do you know? How did you come to the conclusion?" She said, "Because it happened for the first time in my life that my dog came to the door, sniffed a stranger, and never barked." So I concluded that you must be a real saint. I didn't want to argue with you, but I actually knew exactly the real reason why the dog didn't bark. Because for dogs, you know, devotees are so confusing. Because dogs, they rely on their sense of smell for, you know, understanding who is in front of them more than the eyes. And so they look at the devotee and they come and, you know, they smell, they sniff, and they become really confused. Why? Because, you know, devotees, they look like people, but they don't smell like people. You know, because we're not going to go into details what normally people smell like. You know, alcohol, tobacco, etc., perfumes and so many other things. And, you know, like meat eating also gives certain odor to the body, which is not really exciting at all. But, you know, the dogs smell the devotee, and what do they smell? They smell, you know, incense, they smell like, you know, also vegetarian lifestyle gives certain odor to the body, etc. And so they become really confused. And oftentimes dogs don't bark at the devotees because they don't know who is that. And so, anyway, I was thinking, you know, it was a nice Krishna's arrangement to bewilder that lady and get her to buy Prabhupada's book. Anyway, let her think whatever she wants, at least she'll get benefit. But, you know, this was another example how association affects everyone. I guess, you know, like dogs and human beings associating with each other. Dogs are getting benefit because they're getting good association, and human beings degrade like that. You know, there was one story that one dog actually learned to say a couple of words. You know, instead of barking, the dog would say, "Mama, Papa." And we know that, you know, human beings, they often, you know, talk to each other in such a way, it looks like they bark at each other. But anyway, so devotees, because they associate with the Supreme Lord, they acquire similar qualities to the Supreme Lord. So this is the primary benefit, I mean, one of the primary benefits of the process of bhakti. Of course, the primary benefit is developing pure love of God. But this is one of the very impressive benefits as well. So, therefore, Shukadeva Goswami says this is the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in the next text, he describes the descendants of King Bhagirath. And some of these descendants, they are described in details, and some are just mentioned in Bhagavatam. And so he mentions a couple of things about some of the great, 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 great grandsons of King Bhagirath, such as Rituparna, who was expert in gambling, and Nalaraj, who was expert in controlling horses. And so they were teaching each other these arts. And so we can understand that these are all Kshatriyas, kings, and so for them it's natural to have interest in horses and to have interest in gambling. Why gambling? That kings were known for their attachment to gambling, because that's their nature. King or Raja is, you know, the word Raja is implying that this person is influenced by Rajas, by the mode of passion. And so their whole life is gambling. You know, when they fight, they put their own life at stake. And so in order to engage their nature, they use different activities like that. And it is natural for Kshatriyas, but nevertheless, Srila Prabhupada says that for devotees, though they be Kshatriyas or whoever, gambling is not advisable. And he gives a very good example of how one great devotee greatly suffered because of his attachment to gambling, natural attachment, but still. Who was that? Yeah, Maharaj Yudhishthir. And also he made his whole family suffer due to that. And so Srila Prabhupada says very interesting things in the purport. And if you listen carefully to what Srila Prabhupada says, you would be surprised. I mean, when I read this purport first time, preparing for the class, I was completely confused what Srila Prabhupada's talking about. I'll just read you the sentence, which is so confusing, and from the first. Prabhupada says, in other words, a devotee may not be expert in materialistic activity. It's therefore advised in the Shastra that materialistic activities are not at all suitable for the living entities, especially the devotees. And he's talking about gambling. And then he says, a devotee should therefore be satisfied to eat whatever is sent as prasad by the Supreme Lord. So it's like really confusing. Talking about the gambling and suddenly jumping to eating prasadam only. So, but it's only confusing from the first sight. Actually, there is a logic there. What is the logic? Anyone could understand the logic, how these things are connected, gambling and eating only prasadam. Yes, Srinivas Prabhu. Okay, interesting. Take on it. Actually, Srila Prabhupada talks about four pillars of sinful life, which are meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication. And so these four are actually connected. It's very interesting how my spiritual master explains how it is connected. He says, in the material world, it all starts with meat eating. You know, and it's a bad habit, meat eating. It's not natural for a human being to eat meat at all, but it's just an acquired bad habit in the same way as smoking or drinking. And unfortunately, it is taken as normal by people. But because it's not normal to eat meat, therefore people have to take alcohol, because, you know, it needs some powerful digestive aid to assimilate meat in the body. And so after they eat meat, they have to drink alcohol. And after they drink alcohol, naturally, the lust arises. It's very well known fact that when people are drunk, they become more lusty. They cannot control their senses properly. And so they look for sexual pleasure. And of course, they don't care whether it is licit or illicit. To the most part, it would be illicit sex. And then, you know, they become entangled in this network of sinful activities, which requires a lot of money, and therefore they have to gamble to support the whole thing. So all these four are connected to each other. And therefore Srila Prabhupada gives a connection here. Instead of gambling, just take prasadam and be satisfied with whatever little Lord is sending. Because this dissatisfaction with what we have is leading to all these sinful activities, and it is very nicely illustrated. Well, maybe first we should say a few words about gambling itself, even though it's not, you know, like out of the four, like meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling, what is the worst type of sinful activity? What would you say? Meat eating. What's the next after that? Illicit sex. What's the next after that? Intoxication. And so, you know, according to our logic, gambling is the least of all evils, right? But then, we know that the four sinful activities, why do we follow four regulative principles? Why do we avoid these four sinful activities? Because they destroy the four pillars of spiritual life, which are austerity, truthfulness, purity, and mercy. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Satya Daya Tapashuchi. So these four pillars of spiritual life are destroyed by the four sinful activities. And so, truthfulness, mercy, austerity, and cleanliness. Out of these four, which one is the most important for us in Kali Yuga? Truthfulness, yes. This is very nicely described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so, what does the gambling destroys? It destroys truthfulness. So therefore, even though it seems to be the least of all this evil, it is the beginning of the downfall. And so therefore, Srila Prabhupada is focusing on the gambling here, and then he doesn't elaborate on the subject, but he just indicates how the gambling is, you know, the beginning of the downfall. And actually, if you read this part of Mahabharata, how this, you know, how Pandavas were induced to take part in this gambling match, it's mind-blowing. It's amazing. It teaches us so many wonderful lessons. Actually, the first striking point in Mahabharata, you know, you have the devotees and then you have materialistic side, Kauravas, Duryodhana, Dushasana, and Dhritarashtra and all. But if you read, if you see how they speak, each and every one of them talks Vedic philosophy. And all of them say, like, you know, from the start, when, you know, Duryodhan, well, the pre-history was that Duryodhan was invited to that wonderful palace by the Pandavas, and then he got completely confused there. He walked onto the wall thinking that this is the doorway, smashed his head against that, you know, apparent doorway. And then when he went into the other hall, there was a floor, but it seemed like a water, and so he tucked his in the previous hall there was, he thought this was a floor, but this was a water, and so he wet himself into that water. In the other hall there was a solid floor which resembled water, so he tucked his dhoti not to get wet anymore. And so, you know, Draupadi made a slanting remark. She said, "A blind father has a blind son." And so this was, and Duryodhan really took the offense. But he didn't say anything, but he really had a burning desire to retaliate for that comment, right? He felt so offended. But this is very interesting that Can we think that Pandavas, they invited Duryodhana to offend him so badly? Of course not. They just wanted him to admire, you know, the nice palace and how everything, you know, expertly done. But why Duryodhana was walking into the walls and falling into the water, etc., etc., there? Because he was not attentive enough, right? That the most important practice for us as devotees is chanting of the holy name, especially japa. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport to Chitanchiritamrita that of all the instructions of the spiritual master, the most important is to chant minimum 16 rounds every day without fail. And so we have to chant avoiding offenses. And what is the root cause of all the offenses? Inattentiveness, pramada. Mm. And it's very interesting, the word pramada. What is mada? Madness. Or what's the other translation of mada? Anyone knows? No. It's not illusion. Anyone knows? Pride. It's very interesting. According to Sanskrit, explanations. To be proud means to be mad. These are the synonyms. It's amazing, right? And then what does the prefix pra mean? Pra means intensifying prefix, right? So like very deeply, or making the meaning very deep. So it's deeply rooted madness caused by pride, by the way. And so, you know, inattentiveness in chanting the holy name is explained as very deep madness. And actually, sometimes it looks like that some devotees chant, and they chant something which is not at all Maha Mantra. And if I hear Maha Mantra like that, I always wanna, you know, come to the person and ask, have you actually heard what you just said? Do you listen to what you're saying? You know, it's like madness. You speak something and you don't even listen to what you say, right? So this is madness. So, and of course, if one chants the holy name in such a maddened state, naturally it breeds all other offenses. And why do we have to chant the holy name attentively? Because it's also interesting point. My spiritual master mentions the way we chant our rounds is the way we live our lives. Right? Because it's our relationship with Krishna through and through. Right? It doesn't mean that you have your relationship with Krishna only when you chant. And once you chant, you finished your chanting, the Krishna is gone, now you're on your own. No, Krishna is here. Krishna is always with us. It's the question whether we are here or not. Krishna is always here. We are absent. We think that, you know, where is God? I don't see him. But actually devotees are thinking, where am I? God is here already. And he's always been here. And so, you know, if we do not chant our rounds attentively, if we are distracted in our rounds, we are living distracted lives. And so if we live distracted lives, we'll get so many problems. And because Duryodhan was obviously, actually it's interesting that Duryodhan was a devotee. And it shows in many places. Like when he induced Pandavas, you know, he induced Maharaj Yudhishthir to gamble, and Maharaj Yudhishthir lost practically everything, and he was about to, can't remember, bet either himself or Draupadi. But anyway, at the last stage of gambling, you know, Vidura lost his patience and he started telling, you know, stop that. You can't understand what you're doing. You're destroying yourself. You're destroying your whole dynasty with this foolishness. Stop that immediately. And Duryodhan became enraged. And it was very interesting what he said. Of course, he said, Vidura, you know, like, how can you tell such things, you know, speak against someone who maintains you? You should not speak like that because I'm your master. Basically, and you are my servant, you cannot challenge your master, right? But then he said, you cannot understand that I am acting according to my nature, which was given to me by the Supreme Lord himself, right? So, you know, he speaks Vaishnava philosophy, so we can understand that he is a devotee. But what kind of a devotee? One who is trying to manipulate Krishna and everyone else for what? For puja, lava, and pratishta. To become worshipable personality you know, even still in India, they call someone who is worshipable pujiya, right? One who is worth of doing puja to. So this is what he wanted, right? He was interested in puja. Devotees are also interested in puja, but they want to offer puja to the Supreme Lord. But he was interested in puja to himself. Labha, position, high position, and pratishta, fame, name and fame. So, yeah. And it's very important, this, you know, actually this is the genius of Srila Prabhupada, because he made scripture so relevant to us. And he is showing how these, you know, ancient histories are applicable in our own lives. How both Yudhishthir is a devotee, but he has weaknesses, like one weakness at least, that he is addicted to gambling. And so how with this weakness, you know, using this weakness, Duryodhan is catching him, and he's causing so many troubles for him. And it's also very interesting how that... It's amazing, if you read that section of Mahabharata, everybody knows what's going to happen. Everybody. Like, Duryodhan knows what's going to happen, and he tells Dhritarashtra, I want to have this gambling match. And Dhritarashtra says, don't do that, you'll destroy yourself, you'll destroy all our dynasty. Just be satisfied with, you already have enough. But he says, no. I'm so jealous, I'm so envious of the Pandavas, I wanna, you know, punish them, one way or the other. And Dhritarashtra says, it's a bad idea, don't do that. And then what Duryodhan says, he blackmails him. He says, if you'll try to stop me, I'll kill myself, I'll commit suicide. And so Dhritarashtra is the father what's so, you know, anyway, and he says, whatever the Lord wants, what can I do, right? And then he lets that happen, etc. And so, you know, every single character in Mahabharata we can identify ourselves with, because the kind of traits we can see in our own lives. And, you know, there are so many lessons, I mean, we won't have time to go through all of them. But I was thinking one, and it's related back to the point of gambling, which destroys truthfulness, right? That what is the major feature of Duryodhan? That he was given so many good advice, so many people tried to give him a feedback and help him, and he was completely rejecting every single good advice, and he was doing only what he wanted to do, just to, you know, attain the topmost position. This is what he was interested in. Recently, I came across a very interesting article about Everest Mountain. Very interesting feature that the slopes of the Everest are literally covered with dead bodies, with corpses of those people who didn't make it to the top. So many. You know, because it's cold there, that the bodies, they don't rot, they just lie there. And some bodies are even used as landmarks. You know, they say, if you reach... 8,000 meter mark, you'll see the dead body in with yellow boots. That's your landmark. Once you pass the yellow boots, you understand that you reached 8,000 meters. So it's crazy. And it's like I was thinking, you know, those who go to conquer Everest, many of those who wanted to conquer Everest achieved, you know, how do you say that? They forever rest on the slopes of Everest, right? I'm not sure if ever rest is connected to that, but anyway, you know, this is what people gain. And it's really, really interesting that, you know, what the hell people do it for. Because you risk your life. You go through so much misery for what? Just to reach the top? And what will you find there? It's cold and it's really lonely up there, right? With so much effort, you go up there and it's cold and it's lonely. And the interesting thing, they say that those who only focused on reaching the top, they're destined to die on the way down. Because they do not, you know, measure their strength. They do not, you know, like, use their energy wisely. And so they die on the way down. Only those who plan to go up and go down completely, you know, only they have a chance. And so I was thinking this is so synonymous to the material life, that material world means people want to achieve the greatest height, right? But topmost position in the world, but what do they find? They will discover that it's really lonely on the top and it's really cold, right? Why it's cold? Because instead of, you know, nice warm relationships, you will only get jealousy, right? And very artificial relationships. And so this is what, and, you know, it's like people strive their whole life to get misery only because they don't understand that. But, you know, at least as devotees, we have a chance to understand these things. And, but this tendency is there. Self-destructive tendency is built in every single conditioned soul. And Krishna consciousness means in order to advance, we got to get rid of that self-destructive tendency. We should stop killing ourselves. You know, people are killing themselves very obviously, like they drink poison, you know, they take, intoxication means poison, and they eat dead corpses, etc., etc. So they do so many self-destructive things. But you can destroy yourself also in a subtle way by trying to gain the topmost position in life. And the danger in devotional service that it also might become available and we might get sidetracked from that. We might try to enjoy the so-called, you know, benefits, which are just byproducts of bhakti, nothing else. But we might think, oh, this is the main thing. Let me achieve the higher position, you know, what is the topmost position I can get, etc., etc. And of course, it doesn't say that every single devotee who has a position necessarily strives for that. You know, some people are qualified. Like, you know, I was thinking that here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, all of the devotees are really, really fortunate to have very wonderful devotees, number of devotees, and, you know, the first devotee who comes to my mind is the temple president, Shruti Dharma Prabhu. You know, such a wonderful example. Every morning comes, chants his rounds with the devotees, takes part in the morning program, regularly serving the deities. This is like such an amazing example. You know, leader is acting as a menial servant of the Supreme Lord, showing very wonderful example. And so, very humble, very approachable. Yesterday he was in real Russian, so we were taking prasadam together, and he was waiting to wash his plate, and I said, you know, Prabhu, you're in rush, let me wash your plate. And he said, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, you're senior to me in all respects, and you're also in rush, so please. And he said, no, no, no. And then he said, senior means one has to be humble also. So this is the mature, this is the proper understanding, and, you know, the real advantage or the real secret of success of this community lies in the hearts of these Vaishnavas, who are extremely capable, extremely senior, but they also have the genuine humility in their heart. Genuine humility and genuine love for Krishna and devotees. And so these are the examples, you know, which should be models for us in our lives. And the other examples, unfortunately, we also have. And so we can also learn how not to be. You know, devotee can take advantage from any situation. And so what I wanted to focus our attention on in regards to truthfulness is that the most clear feature of Duryodhan was that he was hating any feedback. He didn't want to listen to anybody, right? And if you look at the Vaishnavas, good examples of Vaishnavas, they are always ready to listen and they are always interested to hear how do they perform and if there is anything which they could improve. So this is the sign of sincere devotee. And Srila Prabhupada mentions many, many times, sincere or honest devotee, being open to good advices. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that many times in his purpose, that this is the first and foremost feature of a devotee. And so this is actually a good warranty for our spiritual advancement. No matter how high our position is, that we're always open to hear feedback from everybody about ourselves, and let others sing our glories, let others see our, you know, appreciate our good qualities, but our desire should be, what else can I improve? That, no, I'm not good enough. Let me improve further. And so this is the warranty for our continuous spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. All right, so we're a little bit late time-wise. I don't want to hold anyone back from taking prasadam. So thank you very much for your kind attention. But if anyone has any comments or questions to make, you can do so.